This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Richard Willingham is the state political reporter for The Age, and last night was the Quills, which are Victorian Journalism Awards, and there was a big dinner. How are you this morning, Richard?
No, not bad, thanks. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. It's a pretty special night, the Quills, isn't it? Because it recognises quality journalism, which is, at no other time other than now, of course, it's never been under more threat, has it?
No, you're right. It's good that the industry sort of recognises hard work and some of the stuff that goes unheralded during the year, and I think there were a few speeches sort of made light of that, the fact that into this Trump world that, you know, journalists have an important role to play in society.
Now, without giving away any secrets, Laurie Oakes, I think he presented or announced the Lifetime Achievement Award for Nikki Savva. I hear his speech was a bit lively.
It's colourful.
Colourful, we like that.
There was a lot of talk about Nikki's sort of excellent columns during Tony Abbott's prime ministership. She was probably one of his harshest critics, and he sort of went into that, but also went over, you know, her history as one of the first. I think she was the first female reporter for the, I think it was the Sun in Canberra. No, don't take me a word of that. So yeah, she was sort of a pioneer in her, you know, time in government with Peter Costello, and then, you know, back into the journalism game, and, you know, her fearless work, you know, reporting about Tony Abbott's internal government.
Yes, her book, which I've actually read three times. Tass has got it, but he hasn't started yet.
No, I haven't.
He's very slow.
But I feel like I know it quite intimately, Maka. Everybody's talked about it.
Yes. Look, Fairfax were big winners last night. That must, make you, as a journo with Fairfax pretty proud, because, you know, they were highly commended in, I think, about 8 or 9 categories, equal number of winners. It's important, isn't it, Richard, that you get, as a journalist, to write the story that you think should be written, and that the paper, the editorial policy, allows you to do that.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I also think the other thing that, I guess, might be a bit controversial. I think the other thing about awards, though, is they don't sort of recognise that the journos that are out there doing the sort of hard yards every single day, you know, just breaking stories, you know, reporting what's actually going on every single day. So I think that is one problem with the awards, but, you know, I don't think I'm alone in saying that. But you're right that it is nice that Fairfax does back in, you know, those journos, you know, and those stories that need to be written, that take a bit more time, that may not be the sexy headline, but once they're written and on paper, people see how important these stories is. So I think you're very right that there is an important role, and it's good that those people who are doing the hard yards get that recognised.
Yeah, because a lot of that grunt work by journos, often, you know, their byline doesn't go on the story. They've done a lot of the research. They've, you know, in some cases, they've written a lot of the copy. I agree with you. I want to recognise them as well, because that's a hugely important part of independent journalism. The state government has made a, I don't know if you'd call it an offer, or to say that if someone else doesn't buy it, they want to buy the paper mill or at Haywood. Now, the owner of that...
Hayfield.
Hayfield, sorry. Haywood's the power station. Hayfield. Now, the owner of that apparently doesn't want to sell it. He wants to move it into state. Give us the background on that. It's a bit strange, a state government wanting to run a paper mill.
Yeah, I think we probably should call it a proposition rather than a bid at the moment. So there's the long running dispute is that there's this timber mill down in Hayfield, about 2.5-3 hours from Melbourne, and the state has a timber company called Vic Forest, which the taxpayers own, and that provides and sells all the timber that's logged in Victoria to businesses like this mill in Hayfield and Australian Paper elsewhere. And at the start of the year, they said, okay, Hayfield Timber Mill, it's called Australian Sustainable Hardwoods, we're going to give you 80,000 cubic metres of timber next financial year. And they said, well, that's a lot less than we thought we were going to get and we budgeted for. Our business isn't sustainable with that amount of wood. We're going to close our doors unless you give us more. And the government basically came back to them and said, we can't give you any more wood because it's all been chopped down and it's in protected forests. And the company said, okay, we're going to close. But before this happened, the Premier said, okay, well, we want to protect these jobs. We think that there is enough wood for you to keep running. We think you can run your business at 80,000 cubic metres. We'll buy the plant, which is a fairly extraordinary intervention for the government, you know, a government to make. You know, it sends this pretty interesting signal to other, you know, beleaguered businesses that if you've got a lot of employees and you're about to fold, well, maybe the state will come in and buy it. So,
Richard, is this a form of nationalisation?
Well, that's what I first thought when the Premier sort of made it clear, say this was his plan. It was, and by his own words, he said it was unprecedented and unconventional.
I've actually heard the word nationalisation creep into the narrative, especially around the energy space of late. Mm. And I'm just wondering whether there is a bit of a trend back to, you know, state ownership of utilities and infrastructure and services.
I don't know if there's a trend. I certainly think Daniel Andrews is the first person to sort of dip his toe in the water about this. And I think one thing that's interesting to look at is the sort of rise of One Nation and Donald Trump. And you talk about this sort of, people are quite happy to be protectionist now. They're quite happy. You get the sense that voters think there is a role for government to protect manufacturing blue collar jobs. They see, you know, if you look back, to, you know, the people that helped Trump win the election were people that said, "Hey, government, why aren't you helping me keep my job?" And you know, there is that sentiment is certainly coming into Australian politics. So I think there's a sort of sense that, you know, Labor's working class base is under threat from, you know, people like One Nation, and I think there is this sense that, well, maybe let's test how this goes. Let's see if we can, as a government, and it's a government with a little bit of money. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I think the guy who owns it, I think the government offered $5 million for a plant upgrade, didn't they? And then he said, look, that doesn't go anywhere.
Industry support, yeah.
How do you think it's going to play out briefly, Richard? Do you think did the government know the guy wouldn't sell and it was just, you know, for them to position themselves as, you know, supporting the workers there by trying to do this? Or do you think they're serious?
It blew up in their face very quickly, to be honest, yesterday. They talked about in the morning that they'd buy this plant if they couldn't, you know, the first step is they were actually going to try and find a, you know, independent commercial buyer, and if that failed, the government would step in. But there's a lot of bad blood between the company and the government, and sort of leaked details about the company's financials. The Premier announced they were closing before the company even told its workers, and I don't think there was a lot of love lost in sort of the negotiations over the last 2 months. And so, and then yesterday, you know, the Premier comes out with this bold plan to help save the plant, and then all of a sudden the company said, oh, we're not selling it. We're going to move equipment to Tasmania, where Tasmanian government is looking to open up the forest for more logging. There's some sort of moves underway down there. So it sort of leaves, I reckon, you know, a little bit of egg on the Premier's face, in the sense that this company will... they're not going to sell because there might not be much to sell, because they might, you know,
move it all,
rip out their assets and move it elsewhere. Yeah.
We're out of time, Richard. Sorry about that. Thanks again for your time. Hopefully we can speak to you again next week, and hope you have a great weekend. And once again, thank you so much.
Not bad. Thanks yourself.
Have a great day, Richard. And keep on thinking about that nationalisation question.
Yeah. Cheers. That was Richard Willingham, state political reporter for The Age.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.